We're doing the Rambam's introduction to Sefer HaMitzvot. We're in the Ramban's commentary on that. We're up to page 12 in the standard editions, page Chafdalet in the Frankel editions. Towards the bottom, in the regular editions, it's like 6 lines from the bottom, 5 lines from the bottom. Ulfisham Hubag Mara. So, what has the Ramban told us? He said, he quoted a Mishnah that said that Divrei Sofrim are more weighty, are more chamur, they're more stringent, one might say, than the words of Torah. In that, if a person says, there are no tefillin, if a person says, no such concept as tefillin in the Torah, so we say, okay, he's just saying ridiculous things. That's not Bal Tosif or Bal Tigra. If he says within a mitzvah that Divrei Sofrim, that tradition tells us the mitzvah should be performed one way, and he says, no, it should be performed a different way, then he could be chayav. Person says there is no tefillin, potter. Person says there are 5 houses in the tefillin, add a parsha, he's chayav. Because when it came to our tradition on what are tefillin, we have a tradition that they have 4 houses in the tefillin, 4 parshas in the tefillin. So Chazal's interpretation, the traditions they had to interpret the Torah, that's called Divrei Sofrim, and over that a person could be chayav if he disagrees with that. The Gemara in Horio says that whatever the Tzedukim, the Sadducees, you remember we went into what were the Tzedukim, the Demus Yonah, that they worshipped the dove, they didn't accept the rabbi's tradition, but anything that they agreed with us on, so then those things are zil kri be ravu. Those are things that we say, that's something that's obvious. You try to argue with that, that's you're saying something ridiculous. Because even the tzedukim, who have no tradition, they agree that that's written in the Torah. So the Gemara said, but if it's a point where the tzedukim don't agree, there it's something that's a derivation, that's a limud, there he would be chayav. And then we quoted a sifri. The Gemara said, when do we have a mitzvah of listening to the high courts? When do we have this concept that a person could be chayav, could become a zaken mamre, a rebellious elder? So the Sifri said, it says in the pasuk, al pi haTorah shel yorucha, you have to listen to the Torah they teach you, al divrei Torah chayvin, men chayvin al divrei sofrim. He'll only be chayav if he disagrees with them on something which the Sofrim interpreted in the Torah, but not something that's Divrei Sofrim at the root. So the Ramban over here is making a distinction. There are Divrei Sofrim, there are words of the scribes which are defining Divrei Torah. There are Divrei Sofrim, words of the scribes which are really their own institutions. So the Ramban is saying these are 2 types of Divrei Sofrim, and where would one potentially become a Zaken Mamre? When would we say that one can be persecuted as a rebellious elder? When he disagrees with the rabbis on something which is their Divrei Sofrim, their interpretation of Divrei Torah. It's important to note that there is more than one type of Divrei Sofrim. People sometimes think that when the Rambam says Divrei Sofrim means rabbinic. The Rambam himself writes in a letter that's not true. Divrei Sofrim, the Rambam uses for rabbis' interpretations of Torah, and the Rambam uses for things that are a rabbinic institution. And the Ramban over here is spelling it out. The Ramban is explaining that interpretation already in the Sifri and in the Gemara. So now we're up to Ulefi Shamru Bagmara. Shezo Abraita Mitvareshet Ledat Rabbi Meir, and being that the Gemara says that this brisa, the brisa that says that a person would be chayav for Divrei Torah and not on Divrei Sofrim, being that the Gemara says that this brisa goes with the opinion of Rabbi Meir, ani omer, so therefore I say, shim kidesh adam bechametz mishesh ot ulemala. Let's say a guy has chametz. Okay? Chametz, we have on tradition that when the Torah says, ach bayom harishon tashbisu, but on the first day, I want you to get rid of your chametz, that the Torah meant from 6 hours into the day of the eve of Pesach, of Chag HaMatzos. Now,
is that the time you can start slaughtering?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So technically, the Torah only says, don't eat chametz with Pesach. Lo tochal alav chametz.
Dam al chametz?
Lo tochal alav chametz.
Not dam?
Not dam.
What does it say, dam?
Lo tochal alav chametz, it says in a few places.
Oh, okay,
So, technically, let's say a person has a loaf of bread. That loaf of bread is worth a pruta, it's worth a nickel. He comes over to a girl, says, you want to marry me? She says, fine. Brings two witnesses, takes the loaf of bread, and says, Hareyat mikudeshesli, I want to make you my wife, to do kiddushin with this loaf of bread. Now, the time is after 6 hours into the day on the eve of Pesach. That loaf of bread is prohibited by Anah. Does it have any value now or not? So says the Ramban, I say that if a person would take the chametz from 6 hours into the day onward, and he's Mekadesh a woman, this girl is sitting there looking at her loaf of bread, thinking, oh, it's so nice to be married. 5 minutes later, along walks Mr. Magoo, and he takes out a gold ring and says, I'll marry you with this now. And she says, what a great idea. He says, Hareyat Mekudesh, say, I want you to be my wife with this gold ring. Now, the second one did an action that undoubtedly is a kosher action of Kiddushin. But you can't do Kiddushin on a married woman, right? Kiddushin doesn't work if she's married to someone else. So, Uvacher, and then someone else came along, V'kidsha V'kiddushin Gmurin. And he said, I'm marrying you, and he gave her a ring, and he has complete Kiddushin with her. Now, they go to an old man, they go to the rabbi. So not every rabbi is a legitimate rabbi. We know there are rabbis who go against tradition. There's a Zakin Mamre, who in the times of the courts, he might end up being stoned. So they come to the Zakin Mamre, they come to this rebellious elder, they come to the elder, and they ask him, who's she married to? So the elder says, the first guy, she's your wife. The second guy, you're goodbye. She's not your wife. You go live with her as husband and wife. So the elder ruled, she muteret l'rishon v'asura l'sheni, v'lekol adam. The rabbi ruled that she's legally married to the first guy, even though the first guy technically married her with something that had no value. He said, no, she's married to the first guy, not married to the second guy, nor may anyone else marry her. That's it. She's a completely married woman. People got into an uproar. They took it up to the high court. They brought it up to the high court. The himaru, and then the high court ruled she eshet hasheni, that she's married to the second guy. Now,
isn't that second guy just a jerk?
What?
That second guy just a jerk.
What's she people like this? I mean,
afal pi sheitil davar shezdono karet veshigigato chatat mamash. Even though this elder. It's a minig, but technically, technically you could. Anything that has a shavet pruta, anything that's has
minus anything that's perishable.
I don't think so. Show me.
I don't know what I'm
saying. I don't think so. I don't think so. What? We have customs as to how we do it, but technically, I think. Biblically, it's a kosher kiddushin. I think so. So now, they come back to town, and the rabbi goes over to the two men and says, Mr. Magoo, I want you to know she's married to the first one. And you, Mr. First One, if you want to live with her, you're allowed to. She's not a married woman. She's your married woman. She's not his married woman. And you, second guy, if you dare lay a finger on her, you should know you're sinning.
I'm going to come and beat him up.
The second guy says, but the high court ruled like me. The first guy says, but this rabbi ruled like me. So now what did he do? He went back to his town and ruled against the high court. We said that on biblical matters, if he would rule against the high court, he would be a Zakin Mamre. What about this? Here you have an issue, which is אבל פי שהטיל דבר שזדונו קראת ושגתו חטאת ממש, being that technically he took an issue which everyone agrees, if you do it on purpose a person gets a death penalty. If he does it without witnesses, he gets kares. If he does it by mistake, he has to bring a chata sacrifice. So all opinions technically would agree that he has to, that he's a zaken mamre. But in this case, being that technically at that hour, the question is, do we have the rabbinic institution that this is prohibited from having joy or not? It hasn't yet become biblically prohibited. He's holding in the hour where it's a rabbinic prohibition. Now, once the rabbis say it's dirt, you can't have any benefit from it, so then you can't be mekadesh a woman with it. The rebellious elder says, no, no such institution, you can marry her. The high court says, we instituted that at that hour, you can't have any benefit from it. So if at that hour you can't have any benefit from it, then the first one's kiddushin are invalid. He goes back and he disagrees with the high court. Now technically he's disagreeing with them on a matter where, biblically, if the people listen to him, they will be in transgression of a biblical prohibition. But this biblical prohibition and his point of contention with the high court is not over a biblical matter. It is over a rabbinic matter. His point of contention with them is, did the rabbis prohibit this chametz at this hour or not? He says no, they say yes. So even though the outcome, the derivative of their contention, their derivative of their disagreement is a biblical prohibition, and he gave ruling on a biblical matter, he does not become a rebellious elder because it is merely a derivative of a disagreement on a rabbinic matter. You guys got it?
Mm-hmm. So how can someone argue with the rabbis about what the rabbis say?
Well, I...
It doesn't make any sense.
So that's a good question. Obviously, the argument is not about whether they will make an institution in that generation. The argument is, did they make an institution 100 years ago? Meaning we have Mishnayot that discuss this rabbinic institution. Right. The courts now were not about to institute such a thing. The disagreement was, did the courts, 300, 500 years ago, did they institute this institution? Which is how we have to understand it anyways, because they're coming after the fact. The question is, was the institution in place when he did his first Kiddushin? Meaning you have to understand that way. So says the Ramban, being that their argument is about a rabbinic institution, einona zaken mamre, so he will not become a zaken mamre de lo karinan be'al pi haTorah, because with regard to rabbinic institutions, remember the Ramban discerned between divrei sofrim that are solely rabbinic to divrei sofrim which are rabbinic and guarding of the Torah. But in this case, says the Ramban, this we do not say you have to listen to what they teach you, the Torah they teach you. Aval, so rabbinic institution, says the Ramban. Rabbinic institutions, our rabbinic gzeirah, would not fall under the category, according to Rabbi Meir, it would not fall under the category of al-fi ha-Torah, that if he disagrees with them, he would be a zakin mamre. Remember, we're going with the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir said the only time a person can become a zakin mamre is over a prohibition that zdona kares v'shigigoso chatas. It has to be a prohibition that if you did it on purpose, the person would get cut off from the world to come. If he did it by mistake, he would bring a chatas. So says the Ramban, this would be an example of something where the outcome has that weight, but the source of argument does not have that weight, and as such, he would not become a zakin mamre. Aval halacha Moshe Misinai Torahi, but with regard to halacha Moshe Misinai, that says the Ramban, that is called Torah. Moshe Toshu, as our sages derived in Yuma, Torot, Shtei Torot, Echad Shebichtav, Echad Shebe'al Peh. That we have two Torahs, one the written and one the oral. Velazeh Chidush Nitkavanti Ba'arichi V'chan Mipnei Sheta'u Rabim Beze. This was the point I wanted to hit, because many have made a mistake on this point. When we say he only becomes a zakin mamre according to Rabbi Meir on something that's dona kares shegigos chatas, it means something that at the core is that what's called Torah, Torah shebichsav, Torah shebal peh, anything rabbinic, anything divrei sofrim. So here, the Ramban said that divrei sofrim would have to be divrei sofrim in interpreting the Torah, and that divrei sofrim, then he would be chayav. on Divrei Sofrim, which are at the core rabbinic, like the rabbinic prohibition, don't eat chametz an hour early, the chametz becomes prohibited from deriving benefit an hour before the Torah prohibits it, that, says the Ramban, that he would not become a Zakin Mamre over, that's a Divrei Sofrim that's at the core of Divrei Sofrim. You have Divrei Sofrim, which are rabbinics that, so to speak, define the biblical. How many batim, how many houses do you have in your tefillin? That's Halacha Moshim Sinai. We have that on tradition. You have certain Divrei Sofrim that define the Divrei Torah. You have certain Divrei Sofrim that are at the core of Divrei Sofrim. Even though they're there as a guard to protect us from transgressing the biblical, nonetheless, at the core, they are rabbinic, and over those, he would not become a Zaken Mamre. He could only become a rebellious elder over things that are at the core biblical. Okay? Umikol makom, nonetheless, klalei harav mishtabshim. The rabbi, who's the rabbi? Who's he referring to?
Maimonides.
He's referring to the Rambam. He says the Rambam's rules are in error. Aval hadavar ha-barur ha-mnukeh mikol shibush. But if you want to know what's clear and without error, hu shenodia she'en alav hazeh lo tasur, ela b'ma shamru b'ferushei ha-Torah. You want to know, the Ramban has spent now many pages going against the Rambam's precept that lo sosur, the biblical prohibition, encompasses all rabbinics. He says he can't say that. So now what should you say? So says the Ramban, you have to know that the prohibition of lo tasur, you shouldn't sway from what the rabbis tell you, that's only applicable ela b'ma shamu b'ferushei Torah. That applies to the way they explain the Torah. You can't start arguing with them as to what the Torah says. There they have a tradition and you can't leave them. For example, things that they derive using Zer Shava, Binyanav, or one of the 13 laws of derivation, or if they tell you, this is what the verse means to say. They understand the Torah better than we do. On that we can't argue with them. Torah she'be'al peh. And so too the things that they have in the oral law, which are Halacha Moshe Misinai. Shim yiru him, sheze hadavar asur mutar min haTorah lefi midrash haKatuv. Because if they say this is permitted or prohibited based upon a derivation from the pasuk, or lefi perusho halacha mipi hashmua mimoshe Rabbeinu, or based on their interpretation of the pasuk, or a tradition they had from Moshe as to what's permitted or prohibited, v'yirehu hefech, and then a person says, to me, it seems different. Torah says an eye for an eye. The rabbis had a tradition. It doesn't mean an eye for an eye. Whatever it means, it doesn't mean an eye for an eye. It must mean a monetary equivalent. Guy comes in and says, I think it's an eye for an eye. What do you mean? Why did the Torah say an eye for an eye if it didn't mean an eye for an eye? There, he'd be in transgression of the biblical commandment, don't sway from what they tell you. Because there, they had a tradition as to how to interpret the pasuk. The Torah says, "Lo tochlu al adam." Don't eat over the blood. A guy says, "I think it means that after you slaughter an animal, you can't sit and eat by the place where you have a puddle of blood." That's what the verse says. Don't eat over the blood. So we have a tradition that it does not mean that. It means many other things, but it does not mean that.
What does it mean?
That's a lav shebaklolos. That's a prohibition that the rabbis derived from it. Many prohibitions. Lo tochlu kol shetitpalelu al dimechem. Lo tochlu without kisui adam. Many things Chazal derived from lo tochlu al adam. So lav shebaklolos are many derivations from it. But a person comes along and says, "I think it means this." So there, a person would be in the transgression of this commandment, because they had a tradition how to interpret the pasuk. So in such a scenario, chayav levatel da'ato, a person is obligated to say, okay, I didn't understand correctly, v'la'amin b'ma shamu hem, and believe them for what they said. It doesn't make sense to me. I think if the Torah said an eye for an eye, the Torah meant an eye for an eye. The Torah says if a woman shames a man, there's a fight going on, and a woman grabs a man by his private parts, cut off her hand. That's what the Torah says. We have on tradition it doesn't mean that. Okay, so a guy says, yeah, but to me, if the Torah says cut off her hand, it means cut off her hand. So he has to say, they knew what they were talking about, I trust them, and that's where the Torah meant, you're not allowed to sway from what they say. Not like the Rambam said. The Rambam said, every rabbinic institution is backed by a biblical commandment, at least one. Ramban says impossible, and the Ramban spent all these pages proving it. What?
Who said, what was that?
The Rambam had said, Lotasur, the biblical prohibition that says, don't sway from what the rabbis tell you. The Rambam had said, that encompasses all rabbinic institutions. The Ramban said, many claims against that. And then the Ramban said, okay, so what does it mean? So he said, it means the things they have on tradition in interpreting the Torah.
Rabbi, I guess the question is, how do the rabbis learn the pasuk? Don't sway from what the rabbis teach you.
How does someone like Rav Goffa answer that?
What did he say?
How does someone like Rav Goffa answer Ramban?
I don't know. You have to ask him. I don't know.
He's dead.
Okay, so I guess we won't know. in the Sefer HaMitzvot, I am not familiar with any long commentary like he has on the rest of the other Chazakah. So we won't know. But if you want, there's a Rav in Beit El who studied under him. Rav in Beit El. His name... Beit El? Yes. Beit El? Yeah. His name is Rav Gil. Gil? Yeah, I forgot his last name. He's the Rav of the Temanim there. Rav Gil? Maybe it'll come back to me. I could get you the name. No. We learned together in Merkaz Rav. Today he's Rav of the Temanim in Beit El. And you could talk to him. He studied by Rav Kappa Chalad. Forgot his name. Okay, so the Ramban continues and says, Zeu Shamar HaKatuv. And in truth, that's what the verse actually says. What does it say? Ki Yipalei Mimecha Davar LaMishpat. When you find something covered from you with regard to justice, to judgment. Bin dam ledam, between this type of blood or that type of blood. Bin din ledin, between ruling in and judging this way or that way. Klomar, what does the verse mean to say? Shenitkasemim davav, that something was covered from the rabbis. They analyzed the pasuk and they couldn't figure out what does it mean. Venechleku b'mishpatei Torah v'isuria v'negaeya, and then the rabbis of a specific community had an argument. How do you rule in this case? Is this prohibited or not? Is this considered a blemish or not? And then someone says, I know better. They took it to the high court. The high court ruled one way. And someone decides, I still think I'm right. So then, he's in transgression of this prohibition and this commandment. What's the Ramban's whole mahalach? How's the Ramban building this? The Ramban says, when the Torah said, don't sway from what they say, the Torah continued and said, and if you do sway, and if you rule against them, you become a rebellious elder. That's why the Ramban focused so much on the rebellious elder, because our whole point here is we're trying to define, where did the Torah tell me I must listen to the rabbis? Rambam says, and encompasses all rabbinics. Ramban says, wait a second, if you don't become a rebellious elder over all rabbinics, then how can you say that the commandment to listen to them encompasses all rabbinics? Whatever it encompasses, by default, also must be the issues where if you go against it, one would become a rebellious elder. And that was one of many proofs the Ramban brought against the Rambam. And the Ramban pointed out that the Rambam himself modifies what he says later on in the Yad HaChazakah. He says, well, we can't say this much because then we run into this problem. We can't say that much, we run into that problem, so we'll have to say compromise. The Rambam himself had said. So the Ramban says, yeah, but even the compromise isn't good enough. Vafilu im nechleku betin atzman bedavar. And even if within the high court, 20 say this way, 51 say that way. Holchim be'machar harov. The Torah says you go with the majority opinion. Kmo shamru b'machloktam. Like Chazal told us with regard to their machloket. Im shamu amrulem. That the Gemara says, when they have a question, so... you have an issue, big machlokas, everyone goes to the high court. They ask the high court, im shamu, if the high court has a tradition, they heard from their rabbis what the answer is. They tell them, who's right in this argument? What's the halacha? Vim lav, and if they don't have a tradition in answering this question, omdim leminyan, so they take a vote, they take a count, how many people think it's this way, how many people think it's that way, they argue it out. After they finish discussing and arguing, they take a count. Rabu ha-metamim, Timu, Hamtarim, Tiaru. If the majority says this case should be Tameh, so then they gave a ruling, it's Tameh. If the majority said in this case it should be tahor, they gave a ruling it should be tahor. So you see that everyone, including the dissenting opinion in the court, is bound by the final verdict of the court. No one could walk away and say, well, I think differently. This is what the court decided. And whatever the majority of the court agreed to, that's what the Torah commanded us, that's what we have to follow. And anyone who transgresses that, and he thinks he's right, he says, they don't, it's not like they decided. You see, 25 of the elders agreed with me. But bottom line, what did the court rule? The court ruled a certain way. And the way the court ruled is now halacha. And it becomes biblical. And if a person continues and disagrees, so then he becomes a na'asa zaken mamre. He would become a rebellious elder bizman dinei nefashot, during the time that the courts could still rule with corporal punishment. And that's what the verse says, asher yaseh v'zadon, the person who purposely acts levilti shemo ala kohen, in refusal to listen to the leader of the time, v'anshu the onsho, and the punishment the Torah promises him, ibud min ha'olam hazeh u'min ha'olam haba, he gets lost from this world and the world to come, he gets a death penalty here and he has no portion in the world to come. V'zui kata tzdukim arurim sheshmam b'mizrach karaim. You want to know, says the Ramban, these are the Sadducees. They refuse to accept our tradition. They're cut off from the world to come. And they're what's called in the East the Karaites. The Karaites, says the Ramban, they are the Sadducees. In the East they call them the Karaites. The Torah was given to us written from Moshe. And it's obvious that you won't find everyone agreeing as to the interpretation of the Torah when it comes to new questions that arise. So God said, you know, how are you going to apply the Torah in future generations? So God said, this is how you do it. That we are obligated to follow the high court, whatever they say, be it that they have a tradition that this is the interpretation of the Torah, or they say, you know, now that we read the Torah, this is what we think the Torah means to tell us. And the way they understand the Torah means to say, we are obligated to that understanding. Because God says, when I command you the Torah, I'm commanding you not only to follow my Torah, I'm commanding you to follow the Torah the way they teach it. You are required to listen to them. It's not just you're required to listen to me because this is I'm God and this is my Torah. Well, I'm God and I'm telling you, listen to the elders. Listen to the high court. This concept, by the way, the Rambam also writes. This concept that the Ramban is writing, the Rambam writes in his own words. But on this point, there's no argument in the Ramban and the Rambam. Okay, well, we have a question. Yeah.
Why
if it's long, we'll just. I want to finish the paragraph.
Why didn't they execute the Sadducees?
Good question.
A whole bunch of people.
Okay. Few things. Firstly, there was a large part of history where the Sadducees were the majority, at least in the courts even. Mm. You had situations where they were the majority. We didn't always have the upper hand militarily or politically. We didn't exactly have the capacity to do what was right at that time. And
they weren't capable of, you'd think like if they were in power they would have destroyed the oral tradition.
It's not so we see they tried. Yeah. So even though they had control of the court within the temple, the rabbis convened their own academies outside the temple. They kept teaching the tradition. Mm. But when you have kings that are murderous, like the Hasmonean Empire, ever since all the Hasmoneans were killed and the Hasmonean Empire became the Herodian Empire, the empire of the slave Herod and his descendants, really we had Edom ruling over us. So then you had a situation where within the temple and within the academies, you couldn't exactly do what you wanted. Look at what Herod did. Murdered all the rabbis. He didn't like what they had to say. Killed them. So the rabbis didn't exactly wield the sword at that time. You know, they could say the Sadducees are going against tradition. The Sadducees would butter up to Herod. They'd say what he wanted to hear. So there was a situation where the Sadducees were wealthy, Kohanim, a lot of them, and it wasn't simple to deal with them. The Rambam writes that you also have to discern between first generation and second generation. Second generation, the Rambam writes, the second generation Kara, and they don't know the difference. The children, they grew up thinking this is what's right. They're innocent tinok shenishba. It's like a kid that was brought up by parents who are unorthodox. They might have left orthodoxy, but their children already have no clue. So then we look at them with pity. That's what the Rambam writes about the Karoim. The Sadducees also took time for the movement to evolve, and then it's not so simple. Who's first generation, who's second generation, etc. Okay, but these are all my hasharot. Doesn't say what I'm saying anywhere. It's, I'm putting together different facts to try and put together an answer. Okay, so the Ramban said, God gave us the Torah, and God demands of us that we follow the Torah in accordance with their interpretation. V'zeu ma she'amru, and that's what our sages said. Afilu omrim lecha al smol shu yimin v'al yimin shu smol, even if the high court tells you left is right and right is left. Shekach hi ha-mitzvah lanu me'adon ha-Torah yitala. That this is the mitzvah, this is what we were commanded by the master of the Torah, of elevated, blessed be he. Shelo yomar ba'al ha-machloket, hech atir le'atzmi zeh, v'anuchi ha-yodeh bevaday shem to'im. A person who's arguing with the court shouldn't say to himself, how could I eat this? How could I say it's kosher? How could I say it's permissible? I know they're wrong. I know better. So that's why God says, what do you want? This is what I told you. You're obligated to keep the Torah in accordance with their teachings, not with your own understandings. That's why we once had a person who wanted to fast on a fast day. They shouldn't have fasted. They were ill. They shouldn't have fasted. So they told me, I want to fast anyways. So I said, let's make believe it was a Asar B'Teves. I said, no problem. Fast tomorrow. So they said, what's the point in fasting tomorrow? There's no rabbinic institution tomorrow. I said, right. And for you, there's no rabbinic institution today. So you're making up your own religion. So do it anytime you want. There's nothing to do with today. Today, by the Jewish religion, you have no issue of fasting. There's no point. You have no fast. The rabbis did not institute it for someone as ill as you. You want to fast anyway? So you're inventing a religion. So do what you want. Fast today, fast tomorrow, fast any day you want. There's no mitzvah. It has nothing to do with Judaism. The Ramban says, when a person finds himself understanding differently than the high court, he shouldn't say to himself, well, I understand the Torah differently. He should say to himself, God gave me a Torah and told me, I have to keep the Torah in accordance with their teaching. So if they tell me I'm allowed to eat this meat, so the Ramban says, he shouldn't say, how will I permit it for myself to do that? No, even when it comes to being more lenient, if this is what they taught, so that's the Torah I'm supposed to keep. I'm not doing anything wrong. Yes, sir.
You're talking about how at one point the majority on the court was Hanukim, so what do? You don't have to listen to a bunch of minim, do you?
It's a very good question. I don't know how it worked. I don't know how it worked at that time.
Because I know it says somewhere in like chapter 10 in Avodah Zarah that you shouldn't even talk to minim, let alone listen to what they tell you.
Well, we have to define min. You're assuming that tzeduk and min are the same, and in Chazal it doesn't seem that way.
I think so.
I think even the Rambam discerns. Okay. V'chinyan shenahag Rabbi Yoshua im Rabban Gamliel b'yom kippurim. Just as we find Rabbi Yoshua, he was the elder. He held that Yom Kippur should be on the next day. Rabbi Gamliel accepted the witnesses. He made Yom Kippur on the day he held it to be Yom Kippur. Rabbi Gamliel, the young Nasi, sends word to Rabbi Yoshua, on the day that you hold as Yom Kippur, I want you to come to me with your staff, with your money belt. And Rabbi Yeshua went to Rabbi Gamliel on Yom Kippur, Shechaliot b'cheshbono, that would have been Yom Kippur according to his own accounting. Kmo shuzkal b'masechet Rosh Hashanah, as the Mishnah tells us in Rosh Hashanah. So the rule is, the Torah is not a work on its own, but rather it is a work that was given with interpreters. The interpreters are the sages of the great assembly, the great court. It's not. This isn't a reference to someone today necessarily. We haven't yet discussed how you apply this today. But so long as we had a Sanhedrin that ruled in Dinei Nefashot, then we had this obligation to listen to the High Court in their interpretation of the Torah. The Yesh Bazet Nai. We just gave them this all-encompassing power, says the Ramban, but there is a stipulation. Yitbonen ba mistakel barishon shel horiyot ba'ayin yafa. A person should analyze carefully the first chapter of Horios, and then he'll understand the following stipulation. Vehu, and the stipulation is as follows. She'im haya bizman ha-Sanhedrin, if at the time that the Sanhedrin was around, by the time they're still here, if at that time there was a chacham, ve'ra'uy lo-hora'a, and he was fit to give ruling on the High Court. The horu.
They're not meaning they're confirming the Torah.
Huh?
What's the practical difference? I mean, you can talk to them.
It's complicated. I can just tell you that 2 years ago I worked on it for 2 weeks, and I still don't have exactly how you define min, tzduki, kofir, apikores. In Talmud, in Rambam, in Halacha. After 2 weeks worth of work, I still don't have a clear picture. So, I don't know. But I can just tell you, it's not something to be taken so lightly. Like, min, tzduki, kofir. The Rambam has specific definitions and specific applications for each definition. And there are nafkaminot. It's not only there. It's divided in a few places in the Rambam. It has different... say that. Okay. You wanted something?
No, I'm just...
Good. Okay, so the... I have to think. I don't remember offhand.
Near the beginning?
I don't remember. I might have notes on it. Should have notes on it. If you're interested, remind me. I'll see if I can find it. So, the Ramban said, there is a stipulation, and that is that if at the time of the High Court there was a Chacham who was on the level that he could give ruling in the High Court, and he's convening with the High Court, and the High Court rules that something should be permitted. They say you could use this and this shaver, you could eat this and this type of meat. And he thinks they made a mistake. So he argues and he tells them, and they tell him he's wrong, and he says they're wrong, and he explains his case and they explain their case, and no one is convinced. Now sometimes you could say, I see what they say, they see what I say, I think it's more logical this way, they think it's more logical that way. Sometimes you say, they're mistaken, no, it's wrong, it's my way. If he thinks they're in error, en alav mitzvah lishma divrei chachamim. Remember the conditions. He's at the time of the High Court. He's convened on the High Court. He is fit to give ruling on the High Court, meaning he's one of the top 71 sages of the time. And he has the tradition, and he has smicha, and he's fit to give ruling. And when they give ruling, he is present, and they discuss it, and he hears it, and he expresses his case, and they express their case. And after all is said and done, he disagrees. So then, he does not have a mitzvah to follow their ruling. They said it's permissible to do something, he doesn't have to go with that ruling. En alav mitzvah lishma divrei chachamim, ve'eino rashai le'atir le'atzmo hadavar ha'asur lo, nor is he permitted to go with that thing that they ruled is permissible, for he holds they are in error. Aval yinhag chomer le'atzmo, but what must he do? Quietly. For himself, not his wife, not his children, not his neighbor, for himself. He treats that thing as though it is prohibited. So the Ramban says, if he is a chacham that's fit for hora'ah, even if he wasn't there, and certainly if he was one of them, so then he has to express his case. And obviously, like we described, they'll argue to and fro with him. If they all agree, he's wrong. So and they say, no, this isn't logical, and that's not logical. So then יחזור וינהוג כדעתם אחרי כן לאחר שיסלקו אותו ויעשה הסכמה בטענתו. After they prove him wrong, so then if they've all heard his claim, come to the conclusion he was wrong and ruled against him, then he goes back like them. But if he wasn't there, they had a discussion, he thinks they're in error, so then says the Ramban, that's clear from the Gemara in Horios, that's obvious. And the Gemara says if he followed their ruling but disagreed with their ruling, then he, if later on turns out he was right and they were wrong, so they bring a sacrifice on behalf of the whole congregation, he's not included in that sacrifice because the congregation followed their ruling. He thought they were wrong. If he thought they were wrong, so then he didn't follow their ruling, and therefore he's not included in their sacrifice. He has to bring his own sacrifice. So it's obvious there from the Gemara that there will be certain circumstances where he's not allowed to follow their ruling. The Ramban says, what circumstance is that? If he's around, he wasn't there to argue with them, but he disagrees with them. If he's there to argue with them, then let them disprove him, and then he'll fall in line with them. But if he lives somewhere else and he read their declaration and he disagrees with it, then, says the Ramban, then he would be prohibited from following their ruling, again, provided he's on that level. This is what we see from those laws. Yes, sir?
Two things. One, would this apply also to someone who was sitting on the Sanhedrin and he was one of the people who disagreed with the court, with the other members of the court and the decision?
So the Ramban seems to say that once they have an argument and they hear him out and they still disagree with him and they prove him wrong, then he is bound to them. If he was on the Sanhedrin, the Ramban seems to say here, that then he is bound to their decision. If he's not on the Sanhedrin, if he's not present there, he's fit to give ruling, but he wasn't there. He's chief rabbi of Tzfat. They were giving their ruling out in Yerushalayim. He gets word that this is how they ruled. He thinks they made a mistake. He doesn't yet have time to take issue with them. He can't say, well, they ruled it's permitted, I'm going to go enjoy some of those lamb chops. He can't go eat what they ruled on and say, well, I have to listen to them, they're the high court. He's on a level where he could disagree. He's living in that generation. He disagrees with them. He thinks they're in error. So he has an obligation to eventually make his way out to Jerusalem and argue it out with them. But until that point, he can't follow their ruling. Even though technically all of Israel has to follow their ruling, he can't. He's on a level where he can't until he argues it out with them.
Someone says something's been tarred, I don't even force you to eat it.
Right, okay.
But what if it's, I'm saying, like, if it's a person on this, on the court?
On the court, it seems he is bound. It seems the Ramban is learning that, yeah, they'll express their opinions to one another, and then it seems like he is bound by their what they say.
And is there like a, like, I'm just thinking about an example where a person would come to the court, and the decision that they're doing is not something that he can kind of keep clandestine. Not exactly sure of an example, but like, it's not like a personal thing, it's more of something that everyone will still know whether or not he's following the ruling.
They declare,
I don't know, it's a good
Tuesdays,
question. Right, right,
that
right.
Guy's not having black shirt on Tuesday,
right,
and you got,
right,
you know he's not.
Or let's say they give a certain ruling about, they say this is treles, everyone should wear it, or it's not treles, no one could wear it. Right, there could be instances like that, yeah?
Now or then?
Huh?
Now or then?
Then, now we don't have a high court, no Sanhedrin.
But wouldn't they know what the hell it is because they had it?
Okay, you know, there's a machloket achronim what chelet is. So we don't know if they also had a machloket. The Zina Rebbe held that anything that's derived from the water technically could become something along those lines.
As far as I understood, he's cuttlefish. Because cuttlefish is a chelazon.
Okay. Okay, whatever. Back to the Ramban. So maybe it wasn't him, maybe it was the Tiferes Yisrael, not the Dina Rebbe. Maybe the Tiferes Yisrael says something along those lines.
Quick example, very good, very good. It says in the Talmud that one of the Tanaim or Amoraim, I don't remember, had hemorrhoids. So one of the other rabbis told him, take the Shkedim of a Hilazon, and that's the refuah for it. Cuttlefish ink is an all modern and ancient hemorrhoid medicine.
Okay.
Good raya.
Right.
Even though I don't wear rosin to sell it, because even though I think he's the right animal, I think they make it wrong.
Okay.
Is that the Murex trunculus trunculus?
No, the Murex trunculus trunculus is what I used to wear, and for a long time I don't wear that anymore.
Okay.
Pasul.
V'chol sheken. So, says the Ramban. ומכל מקום חייב לקבל דעתם אחר ההסכמה על כל פנים. But after they've heard him out and they've come to a ruling, like you mentioned, if he's sitting on the court, then he does have to accept their opinion. אבל התקנות והגזרות שגזרו חכמים למשמרת התורה ולגדר שלה. But what about the institutions? The rabbis say a takana. You read Torah Monday and Thursday. Rabbinic takana. The rabbis say you don't touch a pen on Shabbos. A rabbinic gezeira. So the takanot and the gzerot that the rabbis made to protect the Torah, to make a fence for it, en lein belav hazeh l'smach be'alma. Those things have, they lean on this pasuk, but they're not based on this pasuk. The Rambam had said, they have basis in this pasuk. If you don't listen to the rabbis, you're in transgression of a biblical commandment. The Ramban says, no, that's a smach. Ve'en ve'em dinam ra'a klal. And when it comes to gezer or a takana, even if an elder would disagree and he'd give ruling in disagreement with them, there would not be a din of zaken mamre in that ruling. The kol sheken shamamre ben va'over ba'achat min al dat shuose isur sheino over belav hazeh ve'ino bechlal din parsha zo klal lefi sheikula onesh hamamrim lo hachoteim. So the Ramban says, and certainly if someone would disagree with them and give ruling against them on something like this, he is not in transgression with this prohibition. He's not included in this parsha, because this parsha speaks about a zaken mamre. It's not talking about a sinner. This is a sinner, the guy who's going against the rabbis, but he's not a zaken mamre. He's not a rebellious elder.
Is a rebellious elder a sinner?
He's a specific sinner. okay.
So a
guy who goes against their institutions, he's a regular sinner. He's a regular sinner. okay. אבל הם דנו בממרא שלהם, but the rabbis taught us that what happens if someone decides, I'm not doing the rabbinic things. The rabbi said, we wash our hands before we eat bread. I'm not doing that. So then they said, he gets onesh hanidui. He gets ostracization, כמו ששנינו, as the Mishnah says in Eduyos, it says the rabbis argued with Akavya ben Malalel. Akavya ben Malalel disagreed, and when Akavya ben Malalel died, they placed a stone on his coffin. Amar Rabbi Yehuda said, Chasas Shalom Shakavya Nitnavda, God forbid that the great tzaddik Akavya was put in on ostracization and they put a stone on his coffin. No way. There was no one in Israel as great in wisdom and fear of sin like Akavya ben Malala. God forbid that he got nidui. And at minidu, who was it that got a lachak ostracization and then they put a stone on his coffin? That was Rabbi Lezer ben Anadon. Shepikvik ben Tils Yadayim. He mocked. He wasn't willing to wash his hands the way the rabbis instituted. They made an institution. He refused. What was his punishment? Nidui. You don't find that they said, oh, he's transgressing biblical obligations, he's zaken mamre. No. V'nei zeh lo kibel alav gzera shegazru biyadayim lechulin. Rabbi Lezer ben Anadon, he didn't accept their gzera, their institution of washing hands for eating regular bread. V'lo nitchayev ela benidui. What he got punished was nidui. V'al kvod harav. And the nidui, the Gemara brings different reasons why we do nidui. So why does a person who go against the courts get nidui? Because it's considered that he's in contempt of court. He's disrespecting the court. And one of the reasons for nidui is if someone disrespects a rabbi. So here is disrespecting a whole group of rabbis. So then he would get nidui because he's going against their institution. As the Talmud explains in the third chapter of Brachot. Now, says the Ramban. Now, historically, this whole argument took place at a time where the courts were convened and they were giving corporal punishment. And you see, he gave ruling in something where technically one could come to a prohibition of kares in this rabbinic issue. By the same token that we gave an example where a person who was Mekadesh, a woman in the sixth hour, can come to an Isser Kares, that's what we began tonight with. So to here, there can be a derivation that will be a Isser Kares. And you don't find that they gave him any corporal punishment. They didn't say, hey, this could lead to Kares.
By not washing your hands?
Correct.
Oh.
It's too long to explain. Trust the Ramban.
What's the last step?
The last step, kodshim tmeim ba'azara. And if he's not careful with washing his hands, why didn't he institute that? As a protection from. But there are other examples.
That's on the list in the first Mishnah. Could he do it?
No, kodshim in azara? Yeah, it should be.
I don't remember
either. So we have to check. So we see, nonetheless, even in that generation, all Rabbi Elazar ben Anadin got was this nidui. Kiuchi yuvo bide adam, aval machmirim bo bonesh shamayim, mimamacham ufuretz keder yishchenu nachash. Technically, this is something that the rabbis take care of, but they say, you know, if someone breaches the rabbi's fence, we curse him. Let him drop dead. Let him be bitten by a snake. Ukmo shamu b'gmar eruvin min tidat yadayim Rabbi Akiva bebet asurin. Just like the Talmud tells us the story of Rabbi Akiva and Irvin. You guys know the story?
Kind of sick in jail. Oh,
Rabbi Akiva was in jail.
I said by that story, we should all take it upon ourselves that we're not sick, we're not old, we're not in jail, we have water, just wash your hands and be a good sport.
Rabbi Akiva was in jail. They used to bring him a measured amount of water. One day the wicked guard looks at the water and says, why are you bringing him so much water? You must be plotting to dig under the walls and get out of here. Pours out half the water. When the student brings in the water, Rabbi Akiva says, don't you know I'm on the verge of death? I'm sick and old and in jail, and this water is my lifeline. Why'd you bring me so little? So he said, I'm sorry, Rabbi, the guard at the entrance wouldn't let me bring in more. He thought maybe we were trying to get out of here. So then the student sees that Rabbi Akiva washes his hands, and then he won't have enough water to drink. So he washes his hands before eating the bread. Amar, Rabbi Akiva said to the student, Ten nimaim nitol yadai. Give me the water to wash my hands. Amalo, the student said to him, Rabbi, lishtoten magin. You don't have enough water to drink. Litol yadai min magin. You think you have enough to wash? Why are you washing? In this situation, forgo the rabbinic institution of washing your hands. Eat the bread without washing your hands. You need the water. Amalo, Rabbi Akiva answered, what can I do? It's a rabbinic institution. If I don't do that, I get the death penalty. Mutav shamud mitat atzmi. I'd rather wash my hands and eat the bread, and then if I die, because I die of thirst, I'll die my own death. But I won't go against what my friends instituted. If they instituted something and I transgress it, then I'm liable to get the death penalty from above. I'm not doing that. And this, you see what great chassidut he had. They looked in awe at him. They amru. And the Talmud continues and says that they said, when the rabbis heard of this story, they said, if when he was an old, frail man, this was how careful he was with mitzvot, how much more careful must he have been when he was younger? And if this is how careful he was with mitzvot when he was in jail, how much more careful was he when he was in his own environment, in his own home? So he says this is proof that when it comes to rabbinic institutions, takanot, gzerot, even if they can lead to isurei karet, at the end of the day they are not isurei karet, and a person does not become a zakin mamre, even in the time of the Sanhedrin, they only put him in nidui, just like the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Anadon, who was put in nidui because he mocked netil sidaim, because he didn't take it seriously, but no one thought to give him the death penalty. Yes, sir?
when you're at war, you don't even get tefillah, but you get it by Lashonim. Because when you're at war, they don't make a good zera for you to, they don't make a takana for you to do Netzilat Yadayim. So when, couldn't he swing some thumbs and say, just being in jail is like being at war?
Oh, it's a good question. When we learn Erevin, we'll have to discuss it.